From WXXI News, this is Healthy Friday. I'm your host, Elisa Orlando. Thanks for joining us today. We appreciate it. We spend a lot of time on this show talking about new interventions and treatments for disease, and often those discussions revolve around new drugs or state-of-the-art equipment. But today we're going to talk about what could be a life-changing treatment that could not be less high-tech or more natural, and that is fecal transplant. Now, that's an interesting phrase, and some people don't like to talk about things that involve our bowels, especially something like putting someone else's stool inside of us. But what if that substance functioned as sort of a super probiotic and could help us fight disease? Clostridium difficile, or C. diff, is at a historically high level. That's the disease that we're talking about. It's linked to 14,000 deaths per year, according to some sources. And fecal transplant has changed the way that recurrent life-altering C. diff is treated. It's also given people a chance to live full lives again. We're going to talk about that today. We're pleased to be producing this hour in association with the National Public Television Show, Second Opinion, which is on public television stations all over the country and is produced by WXXI Public Broadcasting and the University of Rochester Medical Center here in Rochester, New York. Today's broadcast is part of the Second Opinion Live webcast series. That means you can watch us on the web at secondopinion-tv.org, and you can participate in today's conversation in any number of ways. You can call us at 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255. Or you can simply tweet your questions to the hashtag 2NDOP if you're on Twitter. That's 2NDOP. Just search it on Twitter. When you go there, you can ask a question, or just ask a question on Twitter. Put the hashtag in and it will come up on my computer. I'll be glad to ask it for you. We have a guest in studio with us today. It's Dr. Jonathan Goldstein. He's a gastroenterologist with the Gastroenterology Group of Rochester and a clinical instructor in gastroenterology and hepatology at the University of Rochester Medical Center. Special thanks also today to the sponsor of Second Opinion. That is, of course, the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Association. It's through their generous support that we can provide you with timely, accurate, and we think valuable health information. So thanks also to our public radio and our public television support. Supporters, listeners, and viewers who help us make shows like this possible. Let's get started now. Don't forget our telephone number is 1-844-295-TALK, 295-8255. You can also find us on Twitter. Just tweet your questions to the hashtag 2NDOP. So, Dr. Goldstein, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Tell me, we're going to base our conversation mostly on the idea of this disease called C. diff. So let's start there. What is C. diff? How do you get it? What happens in your body to cause it?
So C. diff is an infection that develops in your colon. Often it happens after the microbiome, or your regular bacteria within your colon, gets altered. Often that's from antibiotics. That's been the classical teaching. And then the C. diff that's in your colon sort of arises and takes over. And it causes, the most common symptom is diarrhea, fever. Those are the most common symptoms.
And when we say diarrhea and fever, it can be chronic, and it can be very upsetting and serious, correct? Yep.
Yeah, so for most patients, they will be cured with antibiotics, but about 15% to 35% of patients will have recurrent C. diff. And if you get treated again with antibiotics after your second time, it can go up to about 65% chance of recurrence.
All right, so that's gonna bother you for a long time.
Yep, and often the course of antibiotics will be for several weeks at a time. We often have tapering doses, but once you stop them, it'll come right back for these people.
All right, tell me how this is life-altering for people. I mean, I can imagine, but can you describe to me what it's like to have this? It sounds fairly chronic and fairly upsetting, but what is it like to live with it?
Well, first of all, to know that you have to use the bathroom with such urgency, it's very disabling for people. I mean, it's hard for you to want to go out from your house. It's hard for you to sort of work. It's hard for you to partake in sort of, you know, entertainment, go places, do different things. So, I mean, it can be very, very disabling for these people. In addition, it's hard to explain. They, you know, They might not have the diarrhea sometimes when they're treated with the antibiotics, but they just don't have their energy level. They don't feel good. And often people, once they get the infection out of their system, feel dramatically better.
So how does this take its toll on somebody over time? What are the long-term effects of this? Do people suffer from depression with it? Do you become isolated?
Definitely.
I mean, what happens over time if you have these symptoms over and over?
If you have recurrent C. diff infection, you can definitely become depressed. People have described it as being hopeless because they're just not getting better. I mean, they've had multiple courses of antibiotics and they just don't feel better.
All right. And so, does that also cause long-term health problems? I mean, can there be something more serious that can come from this?
Well, you can have electrolyte abnormalities. You know, a vast majority, about 10% of the people who get C. diff end up hospitalized. So, I mean, you can get very, very sick with this.
All right. And C. diff is something that is infectious. And unlike some germs, we hear about staph infections in the hospital or MRSA, things like that people get. This one, has it been well contained, especially in a hospital setting, or is it not yet so contained in a hospital? And then maybe compare that to a community setting.
No, I mean, hospitals are one of the biggest risk factors to get C. diff. Once you've been hospitalized, I mean, it's very concerning because you'll often catch the C. diff from being in there. C. diff is given to people through what we call the fecal-oral route. So basically, when someone sort of touches something, it could spread to them through that.
All right. So we're talking about C. difficile. C. diff, it's as we're hearing, it's a chronic and an infectious disease. It's a bowel disease. Can you talk to me a little bit about how it differs, Dr. Goldstein, from other bowel diseases like, say, Crohn's or colitis or some of these other things that we hear about?
Yeah, so Crohn's and ulcerative colitis are different diseases. They're not necessarily an infectious disease. We classify them as inflammatory bowel diseases, where basically it's a combination of altered stool bacteria, we think, a combination of genetics and your environment that lead to Crohn's or ulcerative colitis. C. diff is an infectious agent that we know of that's clear and causes the disease.
All right, and antibiotics treat it.
Antibiotics are one possible treatment for it, but they also cause C. diff. That's part of the problem.
Right. That's really confusing for people.
Yep.
So should I just be, as a regular patient, when I am put on antibiotics, should I start to worry about this now?
I think at this point, everybody should worry. Anytime you need take an antibiotic, do you truly need that antibiotic? Antibiotic overuse is part of the reason that's led to this problem. So often people have sinus infections or bronchitis, and a lot of these are viral in therapy, but they end up taking antibiotics for it. And so what's happened over time is that C. diff has become more and more prevalent.
All right, we're going to talk about this relatively new treatment, or at least something that's newly talked about, and that is fecal transplant. Before we do that, I want to remind our listeners and our viewers on the web that you can watch this as a live webcast. If you're listening on the radio, you can watch us at secondopinion-tv.org. You can also call us if you have a question for Dr. Goldstein about C. diff or about fecal transplant. Our number is 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. And you can also tweet your questions to the hashtag 2NDOP. We'll be glad to get those questions on the air. In fact, one of the questions that came through was just that. So antibiotics cause it and treat it. It's really confusing.
Right.
Right.
And pretty much every antibiotic has been associated with C. diff over the years. But some of the more notorious ones are clindamycin, ciprofloxacin, amoxicillin for causing C. diff infection because they suppress the good bacteria within your colon, and then the C. diff sort of overtakes everything and causes problems. So I think there's sort of a good analogy for this sort of antibiotics is if you had like dandelions in your yard, one option would be to sort of burn the entire grass, okay? And so when we give you antibiotics, we're sort of killing all the bacteria. But the difference is that when, instead of killing all the bacteria by burning the lawn, you could also just you know, resod, you could try to make the other bacteria better. And that's the idea with fecal transplant, is that you're not trying to get rid of the C. diff, eradicate it with an antibiotic, but let the good bacteria overtake again.
All right, so let's talk about fecal transplant and what it is. I said in the beginning of the program, it's exactly what it sounds like it is. We've heard of organ transplants and things. You're going to take a stool from one person and put it in another, correct?
Yes. Yeah, so fecal transplant basically has been around since at least the 4th century. I mean, this has been around for ages and ages. But it's definitely caught on more in the last 4 years. And so the idea is we take a sick patient with C. diff who's had recurrent symptoms, and we find them a healthy donor. And then what we do is transplant the stool into them by, and there's many different routes that we can go over if you want. But once we transplant the stool in, the good bacteria from the healthy donor takes over and basically suppresses the C. diff that's in their body. And we've done really great studies that show that the transplanted patient becomes like the healthy donor. Their populations of bacteria look just like it.
Okay, so that kind of sounds pretty simple, especially if you're somebody who's into probiotics and likes the idea of probiotics. Could we, because that term has come up in relationship to fecal transplant, can you describe what we mean by probiotics? You've already described antibiotics.
So antibiotics kill different bacteria. Probiotics, the idea has always been is that you take a bacteria or a yeast, because everything lives in your colon, yeast, viruses, bacteria, and you take it, and then it helps make your system do better. So for instance, in C. diff, the one probiotic that's been studied is called Florastor, or the generic is Saccharomyces, which is a yeast. And it's been shown to reduce the recurrence rate by about 30%. But when you think about it, when you give a probiotic, you're giving like one out of about 1,000 different bacteria, viruses, yeast. And so it's not... The reason fecal transplant's so much better is that by giving all those different bacteria and things in their environment, their natural environments, they can interact and produce all the things that take over your normal transplanted patient.
All right, we're talking about fecal transplant. We're talking about C. diff today with Dr. Jonathan Goldstein from University of Rochester Medical Center. You can tweet your questions to the hashtag 2NDOP or call us at 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. We have a caller on the line from Honeyway Falls right now. Melissa, thanks for holding on. Did you have a question?
I do. Could you do a detox after you've taken an antibiotic, like a healthy like detox of like fruits and vegetables to help clear out your system to prevent C. diff from happening?
Something like that's never been proven to benefit people, but I think eating a healthy diet with fruits, vegetables is a really good idea, because the reason is that we've shown clearly that your... We call it your microbiome, or your stool, we can call it for a simpler word, is more diverse the more fruits, vegetables you eat. The more processed foods that you eat, it becomes much more simplistic, and these people tend to more likely to develop C. diff.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Melissa. We appreciate it. You can get your call on the air, ask a question of Dr. Goldstein if you like. Our number is 844-295-8255, 295-TALK. When we talk about the microbiome and the idea of having bacteria in humans, and it sounds to me like a fecal transplant sort of increases the amount of bacteria, or maybe the diversity of bacteria. I mean, have we, as we've evolved as human beings, or even as American human beings, let's say, do we have less bacteria, or do we have fewer kinds of bacteria in our system that are helping us ward things off?
Well, I think people that have more unhealthy diets definitely have less variability. People, and we've clearly shown that people that eat more fruits, vegetables, have more biodiversity. But the interesting part about at least the fecal microbiome is that you can't even culture or identify every single species that's in there, because we just don't have the technology yet. And that's why when you give someone a fecal transplant, there's so much more than just what a probiotic is in there.
All right, so let's go back to the idea of fecal transplants. How how does it work? How long, you explain how long they've been around, but how does it work for somebody? So probably somebody with only with C. diff at this point is going to be a candidate?
Well, what happened was in April 2013, the FDA decided that the fecal transplant is really a drug. And so by giving it to people, they felt like this should be studied. And it shouldn't be just given to people. Some people argued that fecal transplant was like giving you an organ or a tissue, but they felt like this was more of a drug. And so they decided that in 2013, that if you wanted to do fecal transplant for people, you had to apply for investigational new drug application, which is very cumbersome, hard to do, people didn't want to do. So what happened was people with C. diff decided that basically this was outrageous because they needed the treatment. There weren't other options. And so they decided to sort of, the FDA is allowing it to happen without this investigational new drug application, but they still consider it investigational new drug. So what we're doing now for people with fecal transplant is only doing it for C. diff, though there are clinical trials out there for a myriad of different diseases, including ulcerative colitis, Crohn's disease, weight loss, Parkinson's, multiple sclerosis. So there's a bunch of metabolic syndrome. There's a lot of different diseases out there.
All right. So what happens in a case like this? Let's say I come in, I'm a patient, and I'm a candidate. You're ready to do it. What do we do?
So what we do is we have a protocol through Strong Memorial Hospital and Highland Hospital that's been developed. And you have to have failed not only antibiotics, but you have to have failed a vancomycin, which is one of the treatments for it, taper. And so once you've been tapered off and you have recurrence of your C. diff, we would consider you for fecal transplant because you now have a third episode or at least of recurrent C. diff. So what we do then is try to identify for you a healthy donor. And so healthy donor needs to often come with you to the visit so that we can see them and assure that they're healthy. And we hope that they've had sort of, you know, no antibiotics recently, that they don't have any autoimmune diseases or any other major medical problems. And then what we do is we test the donor's stool for basically every infectious disease that we know. For instance, hepatitis B, hepatitis C, HIV, and then, you know, all the stool pathogens that we can test for, including C. diff. And once we make sure that they're all completely clear, what we do is we then set up a procedure for you to come to the hospital. And we do the transplant through two different routes. So the day of the procedure, basically, the donor comes in and they bring in their stool, literally in a container. And then what they do is they basically take the stool, put it into a blender, whip it sort of up. They sort of put it through a cheesecloth to sort of get out all the particulates.
The donor doesn't do this.
The donor doesn't do this. Okay. The hospital does all this.
Yep. We got that part down. Okay.
Although some donors do.
We're going to talk about that in a moment. But
yes. So once they come in, it gets all prepared, basically. Meanwhile, the person who's getting transplant, who has the recurrent C. diff, sort of preps their colon for a colonoscopy. And the reason you do that is, one, you reduce the bacterial load by flushing out your system. And so we've done, me personally, I've done about 35 fecal transplants at Highland. And, you know, we've done it through different routes. We've done it through by pushing it through your mouth into your small intestine through a scope, or we've done it by colonoscopy. And both routes work great. I mean, have worked perfectly. We've had 34 out of 35 patients be cured after one transplant. And nationally, the average is about 90%. So that sort of makes sense with what we've been finding other places too.
How do you understand the process of cure? Do you walk out of the hospital? Do you come out of the hospital feeling better already? Or when does a patient know?
Well, often, what do they tell
you about how they feel?
Yeah. This is one of the few things in medicine where it's really bizarre. I mean, literally 24 or 48 hours, most people start to feel better. Okay. And I mean, I can, for instance, I had an 85-year-old woman who had had recurrent C. diff. She'd been in and out of the hospital, had no energy. We did a fecal transplant. And she says, you know, 2 days, 3 days later, she felt basically back to normal. And, you know, this has been going on for 6 to 9 months for her.
All right. We have some questions that are coming through on our Twitter account. It's 2NDOP. Use that hashtag if you'd like to tweet a question to us. Horace has a question. It wants to know, is the fecal donor generally a family member? Who is it?
So the major risk with your fecal donor is that, one, you may be transmitting an infectious disease that we just don't know about. You know, at one point, we didn't know about HIV or hepatitis C. Maybe there's something we don't know about. And so we've often told people to have someone that they trust. So often that ends up being a family member or a close friend. The other type of donor has always been, we do have one nurse in town who's an infectious disease nurse and has helped a friend and has donated anonymously to other people. And then the other option that's sort of developing right now is that there's becoming fecal banks, basically, where they're storing and freezing stool, and you can pay to get it, you know, as a donation, basically. And it's sort of been developing, but, you know, this isn't all worked out completely.
Right. How does that strike you, that things like banks are popping up? Does it strike you as good that there?
I think it's fabulous because, I mean, like, I had a patient the other day where they got rescheduled and the donor was the anonymous donor, and we didn't know, it didn't get all connected, and this poor woman needed her fecal transplant and the donor was screwed up. And if we had a freezer full of this, we could have just taken it out. I mean, there's not the worry and coordination of all the events.
All right, let's talk about a little bit about the numbers here. What you said, there are some actually different numbers related to how C. diff affects people in terms of numbers of people affected. And where are the studies about fecal matter? I saw one in New England Journal of Medicine, but where are the studies standing right now? And are there any large studies? I know there's one in particular that physicians usually that you reference mm-hmm. about this, but what are the
now? Are you talking about the New England Journal study? There's
yes.
a mm-hmm. there's been studied already. We have 700 patients that have had fecal transplants, and it's well over 90%. And the studies have been from the New England Journal to regular gastroenterology journals, infectious disease journals. But I think overwhelmingly, over 90% of people get better. And probably the people that fail, it's that you pick the wrong donor. There's what other medicine you're giving such a variable donor population. I mean, remember, almost every patient gets a different donor. So it's such a variability, and you probably end those failures. Like the one patient that failed at Strong Memorial Hospital, they found a different donor and it worked perfectly.
You mentioned an elderly patient that you treated. Are elderly affected by recurrent C. diff more than?
Oh, definitely.
Okay.
As you get older, you have a higher risk for recurrent C. diff.
All right. In fact, I just, on our Twitter account, you can see there's an article in Boston.com about something called Open Biome, the only independent nonprofit stool bank in the country. So these things are sort of popping up. So this brings to mind sort of an obvious question, Dr. Jonathan Goldstein. Since this is an organic material, since there seems to be process for its use as treatment, why not go to that idea first instead of using the drugs, which in some cases are harsh?
I think that's a very good idea, and I think people think about that. But usually what people need to do before they get excited to have, you know, fecal matter transplanted into them is be sick enough, because, you know, it's sort of gross to have fecal matter put into you, and, you know, it's revolting, you know. So most people don't realize they might get sick enough to need something like this. But once you've been sick enough, you would definitely do it. And it's so natural and organic, a lot of people do like the idea.
All right, we're talking about C. diff. We're talking about fecal transplant, a really interesting treatment for C. diff today on Healthy Friday, which is also a Second Opinion Live webcast. We're very glad that you're with us today. If you have a question about C. diff or about fecal transplant, which is just what it sounds like, it is the transplantation of stool from one person into another and letting their bacteria take over, and in many cases, as we're hearing, help treat C. diff. If you have a question about this or about any kind of gut problem in relation to fecal transplant, please give us a call. Our number is 1-844-295-TALK, 844-295-TALK. 895-8255. We're also taking questions on Twitter. Just tweet to the hashtag 2NDOP. I would like to say that we are very glad that we're supported by the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association. They are making this webcast and our program, Second Opinion on Public Television, possible. And many thanks to Dr. Jonathan Goldstein from University of Rochester Medical Center. He's here in the studio with us. He's going to be answering your questions, and we'll be taking calls right after this short break on Healthy Friday on member-supported public radio. Welcome back to Healthy Friday, Second Opinion Live on Public Radio and on secondopinion-tv.org. We're so glad to have you with us. Glad to have our listeners on WRUR and our listeners on WEOS as well as WXXI. If you have a question about fecal transplant, that's what we're talking about today with Dr. Jonathan Goldstein. Give us a call. Our number is 844-295-TALK, 295-8255. And we do have a caller on the line who's been waiting through the break. So let's take a call from Eric. Hi, Eric. Thanks for calling. Did you have a question about C. diff, fecal transplant?
Yes.
Go right ahead, please.
Yes, I do. Mm-hmm. I was considering hernia operation, and they were going to do, and they probably are, they have every intention of doing a IV with a course of antibiotics just beforehand. Is that advisable?
Yeah, before surgery, because they're going to make an incision, it is a good idea to have antibiotics beforehand. The rate of getting C. diff from that would be very, very low.
Okay. So it's not a good idea to even consider opting out.
I would not consider opting out at all from something like that.
Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks for the call, Eric. We appreciate it. Dr. Goldstein, we talked a little bit before about this sort of confusing notion that antibiotics cause and might be a first line of treatment for C. diff. And you just talked to a caller about the idea of having surgery and having antibiotics before surgery. Is it really the chronic use of antibiotics or the continued use of antibiotics, or could somebody from one dose possibly come up with this disease?
You know, you can get C. diff even without antibiotics. I've definitely taken care of patients. They've had no known exposures in the last 6 months. Part of that probably is that C. diff's become more virulent and aggressive. And probably that's because of the overuse of antibiotics. You know, when you overuse antibiotics for things that don't really need it, like, you know, examples are always sort of bronchitis or sinus infections that might just be viral. That's when it's bad. But when you need antibiotics, I mean, they're very, very helpful and you should take them, for instance, like that patient preoperatively.
All right. We're talking with Dr. Jonathan Goldstein today from University of Rochester Medical Center. He's a gastroenterologist with the Gastroenterology Group of Rochester, and he's a clinical instructor at URMC. And we're talking about fecal transplant, the transplantation of stool from one person into another. This is a medical transplant, and therefore we've been talking about donors. Let's talk about how to find, when you're looking for a donor. There's a few articles that I've been reading where people have asked their friends to do it. Can you talk a little bit more about what that process should be like for you as a patient?
Well, I think there's two big things you need to do when you're looking for your donor. One, you have to trust them, because the biggest risk that is that we're transmitting an infectious agent. And the big worry is that, you know, we don't know about some infectious agent that could cause you problems down the road. And so often we try to have people comfortable with the person that they're doing. And so it often becomes a family member or a close friend, someone that they know very well, because they don't want, you know, to, if they don't know this person very well, they might have had exposures or something.
All right.
The other one would be an autoimmune disease. And so people with autoimmune diseases need to be excluded because the bacteria may cause it.
But in any case, if someone finds a donor, they're going to come to you or their physician, and that,
and then
there's
going to
be a rigorous process, right, before that stool is taken.
Yep, and every infectious agent that we know now is tested for. However, there may be things we just don't know.
All right, and Dr. Goldstein has performed fecal transplant in this community. They are happening. They're getting to be more popular as people understand them. And in fact, some articles tell us that when people become desperately ill, that it's has a sort of a fecal transplant, or FMT, fecal matter transplantation, has become sort of a miracle cure for some people, that they really do feel better after it happens. Let's take a question from the telephone now. You can call us with a question at 1-844-295-TALK. This is Cheryl, and she has a question about insurance. Go ahead, Cheryl.
Hi. Yes, I'm just calling to ask if insurance pays for this procedure.
For a fecal transplant you're talking about?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So often in the past, we've had sort of difficulties getting insurance to pay for the procedure. But now there's now coding for actually fecal transplant. And in my experience recently, we've had no trouble at all having insurance pay for it, because they do realize now that this is becoming standard of care for recurrent C. diff. And they also realize that if they don't, the antibiotics actually cost more than doing this.
Thank you.
The donor goes through, does their insurance cover it?
That is a tricky issue, because you're now billing the insurance company of the donor. And so we've estimated the test to be between $400 to $800, but I've done this about 35 times now. We've had 35 different donors. It's only happened once that the insurance company wouldn't pay for it.
Thank you very much.
And the topic.
Okay, thank you very much for the call, Cheryl. We appreciate it. And Cheryl's bringing up a point that there are some gray areas in terms of the screening and the tests beforehand. And we do hear, and I have been reading, there are patients that circumvent the system altogether. And I have to say that you can go to YouTube right now and see sort of a do-it-yourself fecal transplant instructional video. People are forgetting about the doctors in the system and simply doing it themselves.
Yeah, that's not something I would recommend. I mean, there's two reasons why. One, the donor hasn't really been tested for all of the infectious agents. There is some support that maybe enemas do as good a job as doing it through, you know, a nasogastric tube or an enteroscopy or a colonoscopy. But just theoretically, to me, it makes much more sense to try to expose your entire colon than just your rectum and sigmoid. And so the efficacy isn't nearly as good as having a real procedure. Plus, you're exposing yourself to infectious agents. So it's not something I would recommend for people.
All right, we're taking questions on Twitter today. The hashtag is 2NDOP, hashtag 2NDOP, to talk about fecal transplant, C. diff. We have Dr. Jonathan Goldstein in studio. And, of course, we'll take your telephone calls, too, if you want to call us, 844-295-TALK. Let's talk to Rita right now. Rita's been waiting on the line for us. Rita, thanks for your call. Go right ahead.
Hi, thanks so much. I'm just curious, quick question. How close are we getting to moving away from antibiotics and closer to some other therapies? I've read and heard quite a bit about phage therapy for treating certain conditions as opposed to antibiotics. And I'm just curious if that's something that is going to be researched more in the U.S. With more and more emergence of all of these superbugs.
What is phage therapy? I don't know what that is.
I've not heard that term either.
Oh, you know, it's interesting. There was a piece on NPR about it, actually, a few months ago. It's basically using the microphages that occur in the body that will clean up and kill bacteria. And they've done studies. There's actually a center in Germany where they study, I guess, every single bacteria has, or virus, specifically virus, has a phage that will eradicate that virus or bacteria. But I guess you kind of answered my question. It's really not something that's...
Right now, that's not something that I know is being actively pursued for C. diff, but, you know, it's interesting.
Well, thanks anyway.
All right. Thank you very much for the call, Rita. We appreciate it. And, you know, we're learning some new terminology every day. It's something that, we can look up and learn about. We're talking about fecal transplant with Dr. Jonathan Goldstein today, and it can be a tough topic to talk about. You said there's lots of jokes around it. There's, you know, there's sort of a different feeling about this, obviously, because we're transplanting stool. But the idea of probiotics and new, I guess, new or different kinds of flora in the gut is not a new thought.
No, it's definitely not a new thought. It's been around for centuries, and I think it's just now that the antibiotics aren't working and people are so sick that it's become such a prevalent topic for people to talk about.
And C. diff is a very very nasty and can be debilitating disease. Can children get C. diff?
We
get a question on Twitter. How does that work? Does it present differently in children, and what can happen over the course of a life there?
No, definitely C. diff can happen in children. You know, they get antibiotics just like adults do, and they can definitely get C. diff. And they can get very, very sick from it. And, you know, I only take care of age 16, but, you know, we've done fecal transplants in 18-year-olds. So, but it's definitely happening in younger kids than I see also all
right.
the time.
Diseases of the gut and the bowels are tough for people. Oftentimes they get drugs that either stop working or they have to taper them. Can you talk a little bit about why it's so hard to reach us with drugs in those areas?
Do you mean for like Crohn's
like
and
Crohn's,
ulcerative colitis?
Ulcerative colitis. They can be really debilitating.
Well, the drugs are tough because some of them are immunosuppressive drugs. And, you know, most of these drugs work in subsets of populations, but for a lot of people, they don't. But now they've been trying fecal transplant in clinical trials for things like ulcerative colitis. They've been trying it for Crohn's disease for people.
Do you, when you have patients that come in for a fecal transplant, you said they've usually tried a course of drugs, it hasn't worked. They really need something. How do they feel about it? What do patients feel about it when they come in? Are they nervous about it? Do they have a lot of questions?
It depends. Some people have been reading all about it on the web, and they want to do it like that day.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you bring it up to them, at first they get very confused. They'll often be like, how did you even think about
this?
Yeah. How could you have come up with this idea, doctor? But, you know, most people that have read about it beforehand really want to do it like that day or as fast as possible.
All right. So there is another option. That's the reason that I'm asking that question. We are hearing now about a pill. Can you describe that for me?
Yeah, so this was also a study, so it's not available because I've gotten a lot of questions about that.
Sure.
But the idea basically is that you would swallow the stool in a frozen pill that doesn't smell, doesn't taste like anything, though I haven't tasted it or tried it myself. And you take 15 pills on the first day and basically swallow it down, and then you repeat it on the second day, and then again, doing that as a way of delivering the stool, it's about over a 90% cure rate for those people. The problem remains is that you need some sort of like fecal bank or something, because you need to be able to store these pills places and then remove them and give them to patients. Plus, again, I think I've tried to allude, there's no perfect donor. Even like a healthy person, you know, later in life could develop an autoimmune disease or be carrying some infectious agent we just don't know about. So that's why it's still this healthy sort of related donor or friend has always been sort of a topic.
And that the pill is not available yet. So is it in trial?
The pill is not available yet. This was a study out of Boston Children's and MGH, and you know it's been approved in the clinical trial, but it's still, you know, nowhere near available for patients to use.
All right. So again, you know, our technical director John is sitting in the other room, and he's just shaking his head when you're saying basically that we will swallow stool. You said in the beginning of the discussion, it's kind of gross to talk about, and it was interesting for me to hear a doctor admit this is really gross to discuss. Is that the is that going to hinder, do you think, the research in this area or people's patients' understanding of this as a treatment?
No, I think, again, once you've been sick enough, I mean, I think you would drink it as like a milkshake sometimes if you thought you could do it. You know what I mean? So the worst way, in my opinion, has always been talked about by putting a tube down your nose into your stomach, and they inject it that way while you're sort of awake and watching this stuff going down. And, you know, people still do that because they've been so sick. And I don't think this is going to hinder at all research, because people at this point, they get so sick, they are more than willing to swallow a pill.
All right. You're bringing up questions when we talk about things going into the gut and releasing, introducing bacteria into our gut that's helpful. Do you ever get a look at the gut after a patient is treated so that you can you actually see different kinds of bacteria in our bowels, part of our body?
When the active C. diff infection is ongoing, you can see a colitis that is going on from the C. diff, but you can't really see individual bacterias or bacterial populations that are going on.
So what we know is that people feel better.
They just feel better dramatically. And it's almost bizarre, because there's very few things in medicine that make you feel that better that fast, basically.
All right, we're talking about fecal transplants today with Dr. Jonathan Goldstein. We have a few minutes left in our conversation here on Second Opinion Live on Healthy Friday on public radio and at secondopinion-tv.org. You can call us at a toll-free number, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or you can tweet your question to the hashtag 2NDOP. And of course, the notion of fecal transplantation comes from people's very difficult problems with C. diff, C. difficile, that it infects the system as an infectious disease, and it's really debilitating for people. So with that in mind, can we talk a little bit about prevention of C. diff, Dr. Goldstein? What can you do to protect yourself? It's in hospitals a lot, and spores live for a long time outside
them. Yep. So the number one thing is all these little alcohol things that we use to wash our hands with don't kill C. diff. So you still have to wash your hands with old-fashioned soap and water.
So it's not like flu and the kinds of things that we see. Hand
completely
sanitizers
different.
Are not going to work, right?
Definitely not going to work. And so what we tell people is to wash their hands with soap and water. Especially what happens is someone in the house has C. diff, and they don't want to give it to someone else in the house. And so washing your hands is very, very important. The other thing to do is, once the person who's sick with C. diff uses the bathroom, they should use wipes that kill C. diff, and you have to be careful about those. They have to usually contain bleach of some sort to kill it, or get a different wipe.
You mean they should wipe the surfaces? Is
yes, those surfaces which they've used after with the toilet. The other thing that sounds silly, I know, but if you put down your toilet seat, because often in the hospitals they don't have toilet seats, and if you put down the toilet seat, or if they had toilet seats in the hospitals, it prevents things from splattering everywhere afterwards when you flush, and it prevents C. diff from transmitting to other people.
So it's going to be transmitted through fecal matter as well as...
Right, and so we call it the fecal veneer, where basically there's sort of micro feces everywhere. And, you know, when you touch something and then you sort of rub your mouth or lips, you can ingest it, basically.
If somebody has C. diff, what about droplets? Sneezing or
sneezing
fluids,
and those
things
would not
transmit
it.
This is pretty much the veneer, the fecal veneer. Mm-hmm. So in terms of prevention, the putting down of toilet seats, the cleaning of surfaces with bleach, and any kind of hand soap will do it?
Any regular antibacterial soap would work.
All right. Spores live for a long time outside the body, though. How much time do you have to wait if somebody's been in a bathroom, say, for minutes ago or hours ago?
Usually it's several days they can live.
Several days. Yep. Okay. So. All right. We're taking telephone calls at 844-295-TALK, 295-8255, or you can tweet your questions to the hashtag 2NDOP. We are talking about fecal transplants and C. diff with Dr. Jonathan Goldstein from University of Rochester Medical Center today. The idea of fecal transplants is taking stool from one person and putting it into another person so that the bacteria from one person to another can help fight the problems associated with C. diff. Do you have people that have refused that kind of treatment when you've suggested it, Dr. Goldstein?
A fecal transplant?
Yes.
I've never had anyone refuse. And okay. Either they learned about it themselves and came to find me, or I told them about it and they've been so sick of it, they are more than willing to try it.
All right, let's take, I think we have time at least for one or two more calls. Joe's on the line. Hi, Joe. Thanks very much for calling. Did you have a question for Dr. Goldstein?
Thanks for taking my call. Actually, one quick question. We had a horse 3 years ago that ended up with C. diff. We tried everything through Cornell University. It cost us quite a bit of money. I have a brother that's at the NIH, and when I called him, he suggested the fecal transplant. Before we went ahead with it, I looked online, and there were numerous articles from old-timers on the track that used to treat the horses to dairy farmers who said that it was just normal in nature that the young cows will go over and eat their mother's stool. And I was wondering why it ended up taking so long if it's been around for so long. Even the people at Cornell were reluctant to allow us to do anything. They wanted to take the bacteria from the stomach of a well horse to be able to give to ours. And we brought her home, put her in a pasture with two other horses, and within 2 days she was eating the manure of the older horse, and within 3 days it cleared up, and within 2-3 months she was at full weight.
Well, I don't know about veterinary medicine, but I do know this has been going on with horses for ages, and people have been doing this. And, you know, I think the reason why humans haven't caught on is they have such an aversion to stool. But now that the antibiotics aren't working, it clearly works extremely well for people. And now they've been sick enough they want to do it.
All right. Thanks very much for the call, Joe. We appreciate the call and the sharing of that story. I didn't realize that this had been around in the veterinary world for so long. Let's stay with the telephones now. We have a few minutes left in our program. Claudette's on line one. Thanks for calling, Claudette. Go right ahead, please, with your question.
Yes, thank you so much for taking my call. In 2011, the end of 2011, I got very ill. I had an intestinal obstruction, and I had surgery. I had about 7-8 inches of my small intestines taken and about maybe 3 inches of my lower colon. I might have been okay, but I did get the infection. They never told me what infection that I had, but I was very, very, very critically ill. I was sent home, then I had to come back. And then I had a nurse come every day. And my question is, first of all, they never told me which infection I had. But my question is, can, even though it took me until 2013 to get back, okay, can it be a reoccurrence of whatever I had? I don't know if it was C. diff. I don't know if it was Mercer. I don't know if it was staph. But I did have to have a long run of antibiotics, and it took a long time for that infection to get cleared up in my system.
Dr. Goldstein?
Well, I don't have all the details of your case, but, you know, it's hard to say exactly what happened to you. But sometimes, one, I'm glad you're doing well now, but, you know, it's very hard sometimes to get infections out of your bowels, whether it's in the bowels or outside of the bowels, and often it can be a long road to recovery.
Right, and we have heard about this, and this is what you're referring to when you talk about people that have been on different treatments for a very long time. Thanks so much for sharing that story, Claudette.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're more than welcome. Let's stay with the phones. We have time for one more call. Ann's on line three. Hi, Ann. Go right ahead. If you have a quick question, we can certainly try and get it answered.
Yes. I know probiotics are full of various kinds of good bacteria, and I wonder if you know if those are effective. And I hope you're not going to say they didn't study it yet.
So effective for recurrent C. diff, do you mean?
Yes, bowel diseases. And
so the
would
one
probiotics be a remedy?
So they won't treat the infection when you have C. diff, but the probiotics are good at preventing recurrent C. diff. But the one probiotic that has been studied is called Saccharomyces or Florastor. You can buy this. It's over the counter. And, you know, if you take one pill twice a day for 8 weeks, as they did in the study, the chance of recurrence is reduced by about 30%.
All right, thanks for the call, Ann. We appreciate it. One last question we have time for comes from Karen on Twitter. If hand sanitizer doesn't work against C. diff, are healthcare workers advised to use soap? Do they have to wash their hands with soap and water when they come in your room?
Well, that's a tough one. There is alcohol everywhere these days, you know, because it leads to increased washing your hands. Mm-hmm. And not every patient do you wash your hands in between with soap and water. Any patient with C. diff, you're supposed to wash your hands with soap and water before examining patients. A lot of physicians these days also put gloves on to sort of protect you and them from getting an infection when they examine you.
All right, Dr. Jonathan Goldstein from University of Rochester Medical Center, thanks so much for your time today and for talking about the subject. It can be tough, but you made it a lot easier by admitting it all up front that it's tough.
Thanks so much for having me.
Okay, you're more than welcome. And thank you very much for listening and for watching us today. That's all we have time for on this edition of Second Opinion Live, Healthy Friday. We're pleased to be producing this hour in association with the University of Rochester Medical Center and with the national public television show Second Opinion. You can watch this program on the web at secondopinion-tv.org. We're going to have it webcast up there for quite a while. And I would like to thank our sponsor, Blue Cross Blue Shield Association. They make it possible for us to bring you valuable and credible health information. One final word, this program is health information, not health advice. If you have a health care concern, we hope that you'll see your primary care physician or your health care provider. I'm Elisa Orlando. Glad you're with us. We'll see you next month on Healthy Friday on Public Radio, member supported Public Radio.